Okay, hello, welcome, hello everybody. This is the first episode of a new podcast. It was planned to be a German podcast, and funny enough that the first episode now is in English. But I have the great opportunity to talk with Teresa and Bill Palmer. And I'm attending a workshop here in near Munich, and it's, 23rd of February, around that. And yeah, my first question is quite simple. How did you come to Shiatsu? I start with Teresa and then Bill.
I came to Shiatsu when I was a university student. I was interested in Oriental philosophy, and there was something called an East-West Center in the city where I was studying. And I did some courses. One was Introduction to Shiatsu. This was when I was about 20, and so a long time ago. And then I got ill during my course, and I felt I needed something to help me get strong again, and I had regular shiatsu from a practitioner in the city. And after that, I was hooked, and that started me learning about it and studying it, and I'm still doing it now.
And Bill, how did you come to the shiatsu path?
I was also at university in London, and I was studying Aikido. I was really keen on Aikido. And my Aikido teacher also did Shiatsu with us when we were injured, and I liked the feel of it, and so I asked him to teach me, and he said, well, just watch. And so for 6 years I just watched him. And after a while, people in the dojo started asking me to work on them too. And at that time, there was no profession of shiatsu. I started in 1973, and there, in Europe, there was no profession. There was no shiatsu schools. So really, for me, it was something to do with self-development, rather than, I wasn't aiming to be a therapist. And then in the late 70s, people started to ask me to teach. And so I started some classes, but it still wasn't a profession. And really, I still see shiatsu as a way of self-development rather than as a profession. In the old days, there were lots and lots of people studying because they weren't going through three-year courses. They were doing it for their own interest, and so I still prefer that style. Yeah.
Okay, I see. So clients ask you to do classes, or any other Aikido friends?
I started working in a drama school, and when people heard that I did shiatsu, the students came, lots and lots of them, because they used to injure themselves in movement classes. And it was one of the busiest times of my life. My office was like a part-time shiatsu clinic, and although that's not what I was, I wasn't employed to do it. And then they said, well, why don't you teach us to do it to each other? So I started classes in shiatsu and movement in this drama school. And then other people from outside started to come, and it just grew and grew. And there were three or four teachers of shiatsu in England at the time. So, and we used to meet up and teach each other. So it was like there was no formal. This was before schools started. So, in a way, it was from our teaching that then people started, second generation started to teach schools or make schools.
Okay, and how can I imagine that? How did you really get the information? There's up there in, I don't know, northern England, another guy who's offering courses, or and what approach does he follow, or is it like the style Masunaga style, Namikoshi style? How did you come together?
Because there were a few of us in London and who were interested, and we knew each other. How did we know each other? I suppose through looking at advertisements and contacting each other. But then we decided to invite some people like Kishi and Ohashi to teach in London. And that drew people from, lots of people who were interested that we didn't know. Yes, it's hard to remember exactly how, but I think because of workshops, people got to know each other, and then a community developed, and out of the community became we formed the Shiatsu Society, which wasn't a professional association to start with. It was a club for, then schools started, and it became a profession, and then the Shiatsu Society became a professional body, and everything started to go wrong. So,
okay. And Teresa, how is your picture of the beginnings of the Shiatsu community when you started, or in the years when you started the to do Shiatsu actively?
Okay, well, I first heard about Shiatsu through the East-West Center, which was a macrobiotic center, which at the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, was very quite active in Britain. I was in Scotland at one in Edinburgh, just attending classes there, cooking classes, philosophy, yin and yang, all those kind of things that I was quite interested in. When I graduated from university, I also started work in London, and there's another one in London, which also had a shiatsu school in it, or latterly had a shiatsu school in it. It wasn't there when I was there, but it was through the macrobiotics, really.
Okay, I see. And you said then it started to go wrong. What did go wrong then?
I think when Shiatsu started in the early 1980s in England, everyone was wanting to learn from each other, and there was a real sense of community and collaboration. And I think since school started, and it's become like they need to be in competition in some way. They need to attract students, so they will need to find the thing that's special that they do, and teachers need to feel this is... So in some way, Shiatsu has become more separated. There's different styles and people, I think, are more competitive about who's good or what is good.
And what style is good.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And rather than just exploring, I think all of the styles have their place. There's I think that Zen Shiatsu is really good in particular situations, and Namikoshi is also good in very physical situations, and the style that I do, which is movement shiatsu, is particularly relevant for people with disability and for old age and chronic conditions, situations where people need to explore themselves and work with themselves rather than be treated passively. So all these different styles are relevant and useful in different situations. They're not really competing with each other, but I've had a sense of competition. Shiatsu is a very small pond with quite a lot of quite big fishes in it, and in some way they need to. That's what I meant by it. It started to go wrong.
So you don't feel being a bit one of the big fishes.
I'm an old fish, but my style is something which is how can I put it? It's not usual because it involves the client, and it involves the client in experiments, and it's not really to do with treating illness. It's to do with helping someone to develop themselves, to explore themselves, and to live with themselves as best as they can. And as such, it's not the most popular style, because most people in normal world have a problem, they just want someone to fix it. And that's also easy for practitioners, it's much easier to say, okay, I can find out what's wrong with you, I've got a good theory, I've got good technique, and then cure someone, it makes you feel good, you know. If you're working with chronic conditions and disability, that it doesn't work. Mm. It's much harder, it's much less popular. So my courses in general had less people. I really like that fact too. It's a minority, so I'm not a big fish. No, yeah. I'm an old fish.
And you have developed your own style. How did you develop it all together, or how did it come?
Well, Bill better speak first.
Okay.
Well, I think my main inspiration for developing the style was working with children with disabilities, physical disabilities, which I did for many years. And what I realized was the way in which the physiotherapy they were having worked was they were trying to make them as normal as possible. And the effect on children is to feel that there's something wrong with me as a person. So I started working with the movements that they could do rather than the movements they couldn't do. And it had an amazing effect because they really felt that they were in a place of ability rather than a place of disability. And so then I thought that's actually true for everybody. Most people feel victim to a problem. But if you then turn it round and say, what can you do? They're empowered. And then from that place of empowerment, they can start to explore what their potential is, rather than being a victim to their disability. So this style really is to do with taking a perception of a problem and transforming it into a sense of what I can do, rather than how can I get rid of this part of myself that's problematic. I think the way in which you learn that lesson is to go into the body and just to value and explore and experiment with all the different parts of yourself. So I suppose my style of shiatsu is also much more physical. It's not that it's painful or like namikoshi, but we're more teaching people how to be aware of their bodies rather than treating them in a mysterious way.
Do you have anything to add?
Not really, no. But I trained in the early days in Japan, so I have experience of Japanese shiatsu, and also worked with a teacher in the West. So, and I found that I needed to, I really wanted something that was more interactive. I felt there was something that was missing in the way that we worked as a standard shiatsu practitioner. And I wanted to bring a session more alive and more immediate to the person's needs. And so I was very drawn to working this way because of that, because I wanted more interaction. And when something came up for the client, they feel free to say it so that then we can work with it rather than it not being acknowledged in some way. And that for me makes the work very powerful and in the moment.
Mm. Okay. Can I say something else there? Because what one thing that we both find is that quite a few clients come who the doctors have said there's nothing more that we can do. But what doctors mean by that is there's nothing more I can do, the doctors can do. They don't take into account that the client themselves could do work on themselves. And so there's no evidence base for... And I think that's also true within the rest of the alternative world. There's most physical therapists... Physiotherapists give exercises for the client to do, but it's mainly to do with strengthening muscles, and the prescription of those exercises is also mysterious to the client often. It's not a thing of becoming aware of yourself at a very subtle level, and you're just strengthening muscles and in a rather mechanical way. And so what we do allows people to really explore themselves, and so that they become the expert in themselves rather than having to rely on the expertise of the therapist. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. So now we've heard a couple of aspects of shiatsu, and if you are asked, is there a core aspect of shiatsu? Could you name it, and how did it change, or has it changed in the last years or decades? I start with Teresa, and I start with Bill, and then you add. Okay, we'll see. Okay.
I've thought about this question a lot.
Okay.
What is the core thing that makes all the different styles of shiatsu? Why do we call it shiatsu? Because namikoshi shiatsu doesn't have the same meridians. Masanaga shiatsu has different meridians to Tao shiatsu, and has different meridians to the Chinese ones. So those theories are not the core. I think the core for me is the quality of touch. And the quality of touch, because it comes from weight rather than muscle, feels to a client non-manipulative. And it's got the potential to bring awareness and potential to bring exploration and life into that area, rather than it being... And in a way, I think the core of shiatsu is what I believe, you know, my work is helping someone to be empowered and to be aware of themselves rather than to be treated passively. There was one physiotherapist who was also a shiatsu practitioner called Andrea Batterman, who worked with adults with brain damage. And she found that if she worked with shiatsu before she did the physiotherapy, that the client accepted the physiotherapy much more. It's like the shiatsu made the client feel safe and feel respected, while the physiotherapy was just manipulative and mechanical. So there was a natural resistance. And so I think that's the basis of shiatsu for me. It's not the basis the core of my shiatsu is slightly more, I would say the core of my shiatsu is that people have ability. I'm trying to help people to move away from being a victim and into a place of potential. But I'm not sure that's the core of every form, because a lot of forms of shiatsu really work on the thing of there being an expert practitioner and a victim client.
Anything else or from Teresa?
I mean, this might not just be purely shiatsu, because I think any good therapist would have the qualities, and which is listening rather than imposing, and responding to things as they come up. I think that is what the essence of work is, actually.
Yeah.
You've got something to add.
No, so it's on a slightly different area, because I suppose that because it's an Oriental, an East Asian therapy, there is something about the model that that area of the world developed. So as Teresa was saying, you know, I think most good therapists would focus on listening and on, but there's something to do with the East Asian medicine has this idea that the body is not, it's something that can heal itself, and that what you're really doing is helping the body to heal itself rather than intervening with a disease. Yeah. And one of the bits of research that I did with the children was showing that the way in which they learnt to move, the development of infant movement, followed particular pathways, and that those pathways corresponded to the traditional meridians in Chinese medicine. So I believe that the meridians show, I don't believe that they're channels along which a mysterious energy flows. I believe that they're pathways in the body developed by evolution, showing us ways to connect all the parts of our body together and parts of our mind. So in a way, one of the core of shiatsu is to do with connection and to do with how instead of being separate bits or bits that are separated off from other bits, that there's a feeling of bringing it all together and integrating so that it can work as a self-healing team.
Okay, yeah, and it's funny because I read a couple of articles from your website. I will put a link in the show notes of your site, because you two are running a school in England, and for sure I will put a link on underneath the comment, or you can leave a comment on my website then. And I read a couple of articles. I don't know how, because I used to earn my money as a journalist, and I know there's always not only one author. Have you written them like in a teamwork, or is it just you, the author, and you, the corrector? Or I just wanted to know that.
We haven't really collaborated on writing, okay. But Teresa's also written some articles. Okay. So
But they're not on this school.
Yeah.
Site.
They're on.
No,
yeah.
They're on my website. They were okay. On my website, yeah. Okay. And they're more about what I've learned from working with bodies, rather than philosophy. They're not so philosophical as Bill's. Okay. You know, they're more hands-on. Okay. And yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because that's I wanted to have clear for my following question, because when I read your articles, I kind of feel a little political tone between the lines. Is it your purpose, or do you think it's important to, because there was one article when there you explain why you think people are not going on the streets, like, for example, nowadays in France, to mm-hmm. have a rebellion, mm. and you're having like this, yeah, causal chain mm. of the meridians and how they develop and how babies are mm. kind of.
I think that there's two different things there, but definitely what I feel is political, mm. because. And I think that this the politics is really essential within the style of work that we do. I think that a lot of the way in which human culture has developed, is that there's some powerful people and other people who follow. And that's becoming more and more, and people are less and less conscious of that they're following. They think they're being individual, but actually they're just following a bubble. And the people in power are becoming more and more expert in making it very subtle, so that advertisements are telling us how we should look. But they don't say you should look like that. They just show these models who look in a certain way. And then people start to feel, I should look like that, I should be like that. And so that culture is imposing on individuals a sort of model of how you should be. And it's at conflict with how we actually are. And that causes a lot of problems, both mental and physical problems. Mm. So a lot of the problems that I work with in general, I think, are to do with this, the conflict between what society is saying you should be and what you actually are. And in some way, it's like the politics is, how can you rebel against society? How can you? It's not saying, I will be exactly as I want to be, but it's being able to say to yourself, is it all right if I do what someone else wants me, you know? Asking your spirit, asking your core spirit permission in some way to do something that society wants. And when the core spirit says, no, I couldn't live with that, you don't do it. Mm. While maybe your spirit says, yes, okay, I can live with that. It's not what I would do, but it's mm-hmm. I can live with it. Mm-hmm. Then somehow you're in contact with your Shen, you're in contact with your mm-hmm. your spirit. And I feel a lot of people at the moment have lost their contact with their core spirit. So they're floating around lost, and it means when powerful people come up and give us, like, Donald Trump, and that people follow this they follow things, and multinationals, they follow what the multinationals are asking to their ill health and detriment. So
So you say that body work can help finding my spirit again, and okay, then my next question, because here in Germany we have a little discussion, recent discussion about preventative medicine at the moment, and there are many groups trying to bring, for example, shiatsu into the system, in the national health system. My opinion is kind of, okay, there is always the danger when it's becomes official to be like eaten up. Yeah, and there might be a danger. How is it in the UK at the moment?
Well, I think there's a move also for shiatsu to be part of the medical, you know, the medical thing. But I'm But I think there's a danger in that, because the medical approach is very different. It's very diagnostic, and it doesn't really look at the whole person often. It looks at the disease more than the person. So I don't really feel that it's in alignment with the spirit of any therapy in that sense. But you add something.
Well, and I don't think it's really, I don't think that's the right split between orthodox and alternative or complementary, that because what I see is there's certain parts of the world that are telling you how you should be, and those parts are often those parts are becoming more and more dominant. So the medical profession is saying you should eat this, like, and you should
take statins when you're 50.
Exactly, yeah. And also Alexander Technique is saying you should have a certain posture, or maybe Shiatsu is saying, Chinese medicine is saying you should eat warm foods, or so there's all these shoulds coming at us, and that's what I'm fighting. I'm saying, how can you get in touch with what you really need rather than what you that other people are saying you should have? And that means that you get in touch with, you can only do that by getting in touch with your body, because the brain has evolved to soak up all these shoulds from the world and to be a social, while your body hasn't evolved that. It's evolved to know what you need. And so, for instance, to do with, I really admire Teresa, the way she eats, because she doesn't eat according to some rules. She looks at what the menu and asks her stomach, what do you need? What do you need today? Mm. And maybe it takes a bit longer, but she's asking her body, what do you need? Not what does my brain be excited by? Yeah. Then maybe you'd like to
expand on that. I think anything that's collaborative takes longer, whether it's your relationship with your body, or whether it's relationship with somebody else, or a group decision. You know, it's like everything. It takes its time, but it does mean that it's coming from a wholer place, a more complete place, a truer place.
That is a really good example, because there's so many diets saying you should have this, you should, rather than asking your body what is it, and learning to listen to the signals that come from your enteric system, saying, because the enteric system is the nervous system inside your intestines, and it knows what you need. Mm. You just have to learn to listen to its subtle messages, and then you're eating a diet according to what your body needs, rather than what society or multinationals or fads or powerful people are saying they can make money from.
Yeah, cool. I think now we'll start talking about the dinner. it's been a long day. I would say thank you at this point. Or do you have anything on your heart to add here? Then I want to thank you both to be here and on this podcast, on my first episode, more than half an hour now, which is good. Thank you. And we see us tomorrow. And for all the other people, you can go on the website of Bill and Teresa and check their courses and what you all offer at your school is up at, is it seed.org? Okay.
So they teach all over Europe.
So. Okay, yeah, and they are traveling around all over Europe, actually here near Munich. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.